The title of the lesson this morning is Through the Eyes of an Atheist. Through the Eyes of an Atheist. And I'd already planned to do this sermon before I was even going to go to that movie on Friday. One of the members last week, Sunday evening, sent me an email. And she explained that there was this atheist she met online and she had befriended, and she's been trying to lead her to Christ. And this atheist had sent a list of 10 questions to her, 10 questions to challenge her faith. And I'm confident that the sister had her own answers to the questions, but she sent these 10 questions to me. And I opened it up about 12 o'clock, and about midnight, and I saw this big, huge email, and I thought, wow, you know how you get those late at night, and you think, well, I'm going to shelve this. You just scan, read it. I was going to do it later. I was so charged after reading those first couple of questions, I wanted to write my rebuttals right then. I finished about 3:30 in the morning, and I was really excited about it because I don't like it when people call my faith into question. Jude tells us to earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints. If we can't defend what it is we believe in the Bible, if we can't defend that, then I highly recommend you A, learn to defend it, or B, just drop out. Okay? Because eventually Satan is going to put you in a position where you'll slowly die the death of a thousand cuts. You can't let people challenge your faith and you not respond in like manner to the confidence of your faith. In fact, I challenge you to this. Anyone who challenges your faith, if you cannot go back at it in a way that you're stronger in your faith when you're done, you did not earnestly contend for the faith. You have to be able to do that. And when I saw these 10 questions written down, wow, I could not go to... I knew there would be no way I could go to bed unless if I wrestled with these 10 questions. And I want you to see through the eyes of the atheist this morning. Because there are some atheists who have some legitimate questions. But I think it's up to the Christian to give some legitimate answers to those questions. So I want to share with you these 10 questions, which I stayed up till 3:30 in the morning answering on the busiest day of my week. Question number one, through the eyes of an atheist. Question number one, here's what this atheist wrote. According to a recent poll, 3 out of 4 doctors believe that God is performing medical miracles on earth right now. Most Christians believe that God is curing cancers, healing diseases, reversing the effects of poisons, and so on. So here's the question. Why won't God heal amputees? It's a simple question, isn't it? That's the exact question as she wrote it. Here's my answer. First of all, you make the assumption that God is in the business of carrying out miracles today is very false. Now, what I mean is, these first century miracles of healing, I am absolutely convinced, if you follow the pattern of the Bible, that those miracles were limited to the first century for the confirmation of the word. Mark chapter 16, verse 20, and many other verses. And so I quoted back to her, recent surveys also say that a majority of people in our country could not find their home on a map, but that does not mean they do not live there. We live in a society that is becoming increasingly ignorant of the Bible, of which you are also being supplied with your information. Miracles of the first century biblical times were used to confirm the New Testament. Around 100 AD, upon the death of the last apostle, all that we have in the New Testament was complete as predicted, 1 Corinthians 13:8. The miracles you assume are simply that, assumed. Now, if you're talking about varying reactions to medical drugs and treatments combined with prayerful requests for the most favorable outcome to the same treatment that the atheist also receives, then that's a different issue. And no, it's not a simple question, but a misleading one. Your entire premise is assuming that God is required to miraculously heal the amputee. That's false. You are not basing on the Bible, but man. If you're trying to say that the Bible is teaching this today, I will challenge you to give me the verses that you are referring to. Until then, the entire basis of your argument is futile. Question number two. See, now I'm writing these so I know I can sleep well that night. Because if I go to bed and I can't answer all 10 of these, I don't care how much Tylenol PM you take, you're not going to sleep. Her second question was this. Here's another example. As a Christian, you believe that God cares about you and answers your prayers. So, the second question is, why are there so many starving people in the world? Why would God be worried about you getting a raise while at the same time ignoring the prayers of these desperate, innocent little children? It really doesn't make any sense, does it? Why would a loving God do this? Whenever she wrote God, it was with a small g. My answer, the Bible confirms to us numerous times that people who take a path apart from God will suffer many consequences. It is called the law of the reaper from Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. For example, in India, a nation that predominantly worships 350 million Hindu gods, they will not eat beef, though the nation is filled with cows. In fact, they could be an exporter of beef if they could sell it, but they can't because they'd be eating a relative or selling a relative. Also, the rats in India consume 1/3 of all the grain in the country, but you can't kill the rat because he's a god. The God of the Bible did not bring this curse, but man did. And also, we do not have all the answers to all the questions about the suffering of life. Do we have that? Of course not. Only God would have all that information. Concerning God being worried, I don't think he gets worried. That is your teaching, not the Bible's. Clarify your question a little bit better for a more specific answer. Here was our third question. Why does God demand the death of so many innocent people in the Bible? Look up these verses. And now, that's what she said. You don't have to look them all up, but it was Exodus 35, Deuteronomy 21, Leviticus 20, 13, Deuteronomy 22, for homosexuality, cursing the parents, idolatry, abominations. God clearly says that these are punishable by death. Well, my answer to that, to her, was this. You do err again, not knowing the historical background of the Bible that you refer to. Under the law, the Old Testament, the Jews were commanded to be holy and were governed by mandatory respect for the system. This is because they were simple commands to be carried out. Is it asking too much to request of their children to respect the parents? Come on. This is a cruel world apart from your sterilized panoramic view through which the safety of the United States is observed. Go to a third world country like Thailand, where they capture rebellious children and sell them into the sex trade. Go to Somalia or some other Western African country where disobedience to parents can result in death from kidnappers and slave traders. It is not too much to teach complete respect for a child to the parent, for it's the parent who's looking out for this child's life. They took the commands of God serious, just as God takes our relationship with him seriously. Concerning the cases of actually carrying these out, of these commands, it was done to hostile possessors of the land prior to the Jews' arrival. They were coming in to possess a land that contained the most vile, sex-crazed beast of all time. Rampant rape of strangers, homosexuality, incest, pedophilia. These people were slaughtering babies on altars while having orgies to their fertility gods. The entire people were set in vile behavior that there was not any hope for them. They had to be put down. Does it make any sense? When you look at it from this reality, Yes, and by the way, what these people were doing, you would beg for the death penalty if somebody was doing that around here, sacrificing babies on sex idol altars. You wouldn't hear the end of it. Even CNN and all these liberal companies would be calling for the end of their lives. Yet we question it here. Concerning the food for thought, I fire this question back: is there anything on earth that a person can commit that is worthy of punishment? For example, the raping of a child. When these things happen, what should the punishment be? What if it was your child? Would the sentence be probation, prison for life, capital punishment? How atrocious was it when Timothy McVeigh blew up a building in Oklahoma City, yet there were many children in that structure? Was it right to sentence him to death for the murder of 168 people? You have a decision to make. Upon what moral basis do you decide? Even more important, why should you even have a say in the matter? Concerning the Christian covenant, there is not teaching of this. The battle is over the hearts and minds of people like you and others that disbelieve. 2 Corinthians 10, verses 4 through 6. Perhaps this is relevant if meditation is attempted. You can see I was pretty fired up. This is about 1:30 now. Went and got a decaf coffee. I was ready for question number 4. No sleep for Doug till he answers these questions. Why does the Bible contain so much anti-scientific nonsense? The hairs on the back of my neck raised up, and I have those shaved every day, so that takes quite a bit. You have a college degree, she writes, so you know what I'm talking about. You know how science works. Answer, so did Newton, Galileo, Edison, Morse, Einstein, and many others, yet they still had faith in light of their greatness. You assume that Christianity calls for one to check their brain at the laboratory. But that is your solution. Yes, those things that happen, some of them are very unexplainable, for that is the nature of a miracle. But yet the evidence remains that it did occur. Struggle with this evidence simply from the Great Flood. Obvious errors in the carbon dating. Sea fossils on every mountaintop on the planet. Over 5 million frozen woolly mammoths with vegetation quick frozen in their mouths in northern Siberia, Canada, and Alaska. By the way, there are human beings that have gone up there. You could see mammoths frozen. They were quick frozen. You really got to study that evidence. Frozen plants, tropical plants frozen up in up in the Arctic Circle in Antarctica, and many other enigmas that defy your theories. Look at DNA. The simplest molecule is so complicated that just 2 tablespoons can contain all the information of every living creature on the planet and every book ever written. Yet we get excited when Western Digital comes up with a 400 gigabyte hard drive, but is that really impressive compared to DNA? Come on, give me a break with this, I write. You have very few answers, and you know it. Question number 5. Why was God a huge proponent of slavery in the Bible? That's a good question, isn't it? Answer, this is because slavery has always been a huge part of the world and needed to be addressed. What the Bible taught about slavery was actually a step up from what the world taught about it. The Romans taught that you could kill all your slaves, yet at the same time, the Bible taught us to love the slave. 75% of the first century church just happened to be slaves, yet they actually chose that faith of their own free will. Food for thought. In 1844, H.L. Hastings visited the Fiji Islands. While over there, he found the price of life was quite cheap. You could buy a human being for $7 or 1 musket. This price was actually less than for a cow. Once you bought a slave, you could work him to death, beat him to death, starve him to death, or even, according to the laws of the land, do whatever you want with the slave. Upon returning a number of years later, he found the situation had changed. No longer could you buy a human being for $7. In fact, you could not buy one for $7 million. Why? Because in those short years, after introducing the Bible to these people and Jesus Christ, From the study of it, the islanders discovered the priceless value of life. Yes, even the life of a slave. Nice try. No sale. Next question, number six. Why do bad things happen to good people? Oh, there's an original question, right? God is God. Why do bad things happen to good people? Now remember, this is someone who doesn't believe in God. Okay? They have no foundation from God directly from the Bible. At least they won't admit it for their moral standards. So she asked, why do bad things happen to good people? That makes no sense. You've created an exotic excuse on God's behalf to rationalize it. Answer. First of all, where did you get your standards of good and bad if there's no God? You are starting out from the moral relativistic standard that makes you God, for you're the judge of what's right or wrong. You're saying good or bad. Well, you're making that up. Second, Jesus guaranteed in Matthew 5:45 that God causes the sun to rise on the good and evil and the rain to fall on the righteous and the unrighteous. God never said being a Christian removed all suffering in this life, nor secured all the blessings in this life. Take a survey in the afterlife, and then you'll see. Question number seven. Why didn't any of Jesus' miracles... I love this question. I didn't know what to say at first. Why didn't any of Jesus' miracles in the Bible leave behind any evidence? It's very strange, isn't it? She writes, you've created an excuse to rationalize it. I thought about it for about 10 seconds, and all I wrote was, what evidence do you want? Where have you already looked that you did not find any? Make sure you detail your non-discoveries. This is not a fair question, for it does not define what evidence you would accept. First of all, you know, what are you looking for? The ripples where he walked on the water? Is that what you're looking for? You could go dig up a mummy's eyes and check and see if they were healed at that time. Well, what can you check? I can tell you this much. I have a large volume of documented eyewitness testimony, which is more than she has back then, that it wasn't true. So the point is, I'm not even going to entertain that question because it's not even an acceptable question. It's trying to prove something try to prove that a planet you don't know exists is out there. I mean, how do you do that? You can't. And so that leads to question number eight. How do we explain the fact that Jesus never appeared to you? Jesus is all powerful and timeless, but if you pray for Jesus to appear, nothing happens. You have to create a weird rationalization to deal with this discrepancy. There goes the hairs on the back of my neck again. The gospel hairs were standing up. I wanted to capitalize on this one. Answer. If he did, would you believe in him? If so, why? And if not, why? There are examples of both types of people in Jesus' day. He said in John 20:29, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are they who did not see and yet believed. Have you heard the word of the word faith? It is what you need to go to heaven. You own insurance with companies that you've never visited, yet you drive down the road in faith that you're covered. You have faith in the words of the agent that you were covered when you gave them a check. I have faith you will read this, not having ever personally met you, nor even knowing your name. Hopefully they did. Be careful about calling into question someone that reasons the evidence and makes an investment of a life for a real person of history called Jesus. History clearly confirms the sources outside of the Bible that he was real. He claimed to be God and died at the hands of Pontius Pilate. If he has to appear for you to believe, then is it faith? No, it's sight. Wrong ticket for this plan. Faith, not sight. That is where the blessing is. Jesus said so. Question 9. Why would Jesus want you to eat his body and drink his blood? Sounds totally grotesque, doesn't it? She writes. Why would the all-powerful God want you to do something that in any other context sounds disgusting, cannibalistic, and a satanic ritual? Okay. Answer. It's a figure of speech from John chapter 6 referring to believing and coming to know Jesus. The Catholic teaching of transubstantiation is not biblical. That is a meaningless subjective argument with no purpose. You do things, eat things, think things that some find disgusting and satanic, like not believing in God or irreverently treating those who do. I didn't want to entertain that question much more. See, you notice that what I want you to see is a lot of what this particular lady is saying is based on what's been fed to her by the religious world. Completely ignorant of the Bible. Hold that thought as we go into the last question. Question 10. Why do Christians get divorced at the same rate as non-Christians? Christians get married in front of God and their Christian friends, all of whom are praying to God for marriage to succeed. And then they say, what God has put together, let no man put asunder. God is all powerful, she writes. So if God has put two people together, that should seal the deal, right? Yet Christians get divorced at the same rate as everyone else. To explain this, you have to create some convoluted rationalization. My answer, I do not know what information you're quoting. Is it those who that claim they are following the teachings of the Bible in comparison to the people who claim not to follow the teachings of the Bible? I do not recall that study. Of course, if it were set up that way, then the data would prove contrary for those who would be following the one man, one woman for life that the Bible teaches would be 100%, and those who would not follow it would be 100% divorced. But I know that that's not what you're talking about. That cannot be what you're referring to. I think the study that you cite refers to the people who claim, I notice I say claim, to be Christians versus those who do not claim to be. Yes, those divorce rates are much closer. Consider this. I would be willing to assume that atheists do not count the Bible to be as important in their lives, just like many of the people who claim to be Christian who do the same. Many of the self-proclaimed Christians, sometimes referred to as hypocrites, often do not read their Bibles just like the atheists don't. It would only make sense that if they're all human, number one, part of the same society, number two, and equally ignorant of the Bible, that the divorce rate should be pretty close. And that's what we find. One does not have to be a Solomon, I have in parentheses, from the Bible to figure this out. It's simple logic. The atheist makes the closing arguments, though. She lists down the ten questions and closes nearly every question with, God is imaginary. She dismisses them and says, God is imaginary. And so I had a final response as well. You were right. 10 fascinating questions. I really enjoyed the meditation, the logic, the reasoning. I've actually grown in faith through your struggle, and thank you. Here are some questions for you. Question number one. If God is imaginary, then what is your hope in life? What would you consider to be your life's goal? Number two. If God is imaginary, you do not believe in God or a higher power, why should I trust you? Who are you accountable to in your actions and why? If your moral relativism is correct today, is it subject to be changed for reasons of convenience tomorrow? Number three, if God is imaginary, then what is the basis of the laws in your society? Is murder wrong and why? Is stealing wrong? Why? What about lying? What about traffic signs? What about cheating on your spouse? What about homosexuality, bestiality, pedophilia? Is anything wrong? And the fourth question, if God is imaginary, Where did all the evil come from? Atheists and Bible haters have a poor track record on this. Look at the last century alone. China chose to keep the Bible out, and millions have died over the years, as well as forcing millions of abortions on women. Stalin based his system on atheism, and 35 million more were put to death. Hitler did not follow the teachings of the Bible, and millions of more died. Pol Pot did not follow the teachings of the Bible. Nearly 2 million more died. North Korea in the same boat. Many countries in the same boat. Atheism and Bible haters have a pretty poor track record just in the last century. Your thoughts? And now I want to give you a closing thought. Here it is. There are two types of atheists that I've found. Number one, those that offer legitimate questions of the seeking atheist. There are some out there. And what's interesting is when I was reading these questions to you, I didn't send this directly back to the individual. I sent it back to the member of the church because I didn't know this person. I wanted to make sure I didn't err. You'll see that when you're reading the questions, they almost sound very hostile. Don't you agree? It's like in your face. And I kind of answered them in your face. You throw pepper, I'll blow it back. That's okay. But I didn't know the person. And so when I sent the email back and I spoke to the person later, she said, well, actually, you know, she's going to tone down the answers some because this person is a seeker. That she just wrote those questions that way. When they write on, they're very polite to each other, and she has legitimate questions. And we got to be careful with that. Because what if it was you? Some of these questions are just outright good questions that I think everyone should ask and everyone should answer. But then there's that second type of atheist. They have foam around their mouths. You've met them before. We got one that lives a few blocks away from here. I think Tim and I knocked doors one day. One of us did. And it was Jay. I forget who it was. It was Tim, I guess. Boy, he had all the answers. He probably has his own church now. But there are the attacks of the persecuting atheist. And if you're upset with them, I suggest you go to that movie today. Don't put off. Go to that movie. Boy, I tell you, that's really good for the soul to see your faith defended, at least intelligent design. But what I want you to see is this. I would like you to, if you want to take a stab, I want you to answer questions like that. Because I really did. I slept good. I slept very well that night when I went to bed at 3:30. Yeah, it was late, but man, I was pumped. But I went to bed and I thanked God for the opportunity to defend my faith. Now, and I think that if you haven't been doing it, you need to go out and challenge yourself to do that. You see stuff on TV. I don't know about you. When I see one of these talking heads on CNN or something saying, oh, God is a myth and stuff like that, man, I tell you, I just want to go back and I want to prove him wrong in every way. I want to earnestly contend for my faith. If you do that, you're going to be so happy that you did. Satan is going to assault you. You have to be ready. The verses that Andy read, you have to be willing to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account of the hope that is in you. You have to do that. You don't have a blind faith. If you have a blind faith, if you can't prove what it is you believe, then you tell me we're going to get a study together, and we're going to equip you in a way that atheists will squirm when you walk into a room, okay? And I don't care if you're a mercy giver or something like that. Information is information. Truth is truth. The same truth that set you free, set me free, and could set them free. But you can't back away from an issue like that. Don't let them get away with it. At bare minimum, if this person doesn't listen to a single thing that I said, I tell you what, I feel a lot better. When I told her, I feel a lot better about my faith through your struggle. If that's all I got out of it, great. But I want more. I want them to have the same thing for themselves. We don't worship a blind God. We don't have a blind faith. And I pray that if you've been struggling in your faith, if you've seen things on TV, heard things, if you're in a college class, if you're a high school student, you've heard the evolutionist or the atheist waxing eloquently with can copiously using fancy words for you. If you're hurt in that way, if you don't have a faith that's a seen faith and one that you can defend, I would really like you to come forward this morning. I want you to come forward and request the prayers and the support of those who can defend their faith and to help equip you in a way that Satan will be very displeased with you. If you'd like to respond to the invitation for that, or if you'd like to become a Christian this morning, if you are hurting in any other way, or you're looking for a church family and you think you might have found one, why don't you come forward while we stand and sing.